Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.
Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
We're on to season two, or year two, of Elevate Your Game, and we're getting out into the world. We're visiting people in their places of work.
Yes, sir.
So our first guest here in our second year, first off, you see the crew neck, right? I was wearing hoodies all last year. I'm in crew necks now, okay? Former Division I player, former G Leaguer. He is now the director of basketball at Sports Academy, and he is also the team director of Sports Academy Swish EYBL girls team, Mr. Gideon Gamble.
Yes, sir.
Welcome to the show.
My dog, it's been a pleasure.
Absolutely, man.
My first podcast ever.
No, thank you for allowing us to do this in your space.
Yes, sir.
If you haven't been to Sports Academy, it's an amazing space. They have everything a hooper can want, anything any athlete could want. So yeah. Amazing being here. We like to start this podcast off with what was usually the wall of hoop movies, but we're going to ask your favorite hoop movie of all time and why.
Okay. It might sound a little corny, but mine would be Space Jam. Space Jam, because, I mean, that's really what got my basketball love going, you know. After that movie came out, you know, I'm putting my hoop up on the door. I'm rolling up socks.
Yep.
I'm acting like MJ. I'm hanging in the air.
Yeah, you know? Trying to do the stretch arms.
I'm doing all these, you know. So
absolutely.
I think I gotta say Space Jam. So
no, I love that, man. I've probably seen Space Jam at least 500 times. Like easy one of the best basketball movies.
For sure.
Did you see Space Jam 2?
I saw it once.
Me too. Yeah. All right, that's all we have to say about
that.
That's
all we gotta say.
Love you, Brian. But actually, they had some funny scenes though. The characters at the end were pretty funny when they, you know, the fake Dame and Clay and all that. But
gotcha.
Anywho, when did you fall in love with basketball?
So in that time period, you know, first, second grade, but I grew up, you know, Capitol View and Ben Hill in Atlanta, Southwest Atlanta. So Run and Shoot was down the street from my church and where I grew up. So once I was old enough to go to Run and Shoot, that's when it really started, you know, being able to get dropped off there for hours at a time, watching all the N1 players, watch all the local high school stars like Jamario Davidson and Vincent Banks, some guys that, you know, extremely talented, and some high-level basketball from people that, you know, didn't even go to college, but, you know, they loved the game. It was intense. So I think that's where it started for me.
Awesome. And then you said, so it's Run and Shoot, and that's a facility there?
Yeah, so Run and Shoot in Atlanta, and they had one in D.C., was a 24-hour gym.
Oh, what?
24 hours.
You could hoop?
You could hoop 24 hours, bro. Yeah, so it was on Stewart Avenue. They call it Metropolitan Avenue now. But, like, the best of the NBA, the R&B singers that thought they could hoop, the rappers that wanted to hoop, you know, the N1 guys really before that really picked up. But everybody's in there.
Man, that's
so cool. So in that first court, if you had a game, you could make it on that first court.
At what age did you finally get on that first court?
I was about 12, 13.
Okay,
about 12, 13, I could shoot it, you know. I got beat up a little bit, but I could shoot that thing. So I made it to the first court and never looked back.
There you go.
Yeah.
Developing the skills to play, was it by watching? Did you have somebody developing you? You know, you're a skills trainer now. How did your development come about?
Honestly, I didn't have a skills trainer until, you know, maybe I was 16. One of my AAU coaches, he did pre-draft work for guys, Derek Hamilton, mm-hmm. who, you know, I learned a lot from over the years. That was really my first skills trainer. But outside of that, I was outside. I was in the park. I was hooping in the neighborhood. I was hooping.
Just emulating the players around.
Yeah, and I was in the house, like honestly, like 9, 10. I'm in the house rolling up socks, shooting on the goal on the door.
So for the people that don't know what rolling up socks is you know how you fold your socks?
Yeah.
You make them like a ball.
Yeah.
And you shoot them into whatever, a basket or whatever it is. And those are the technical skills that you get your jump shot from.
You have touch.
Yeah.
That's where I think that's really where I got my shooting touch from. Because I didn't play on a team till maybe fifth grade. Mm. And so I just hit the ground running. I was shooting and playing.
Wait, you started that late and played college basketball?
Yeah, man.
People don't understand.
It's a different time now. Like,
yeah.
As far as the skills training, it's like you have to go outside and just do it over and over.
Right.
You know, and we didn't have the distractions of the phones. Yeah. We still had the dial-up internet and all that good stuff. So we were forced to go outside and socialize and, you know, and playing pickup games. If you weren't playing winning basketball, people weren't gonna pick you.
Yep.
You know.
You had to figure out how to play the game the right way.
Especially, I mean, then when you start growing a little taller, people pick you. But you could be tall and sorry, people still ain't gonna pick you. You know. So, just growing through that. Mm-hmm. Once I took it serious and I started playing competitive ball, then I saw some kids are really, really good.
What age did you start playing competitively?
I say 12. No, fifth grade. I was playing with older kids. I went to a private school. So the fifth grade was on the same team with the eighth graders and ninth and 10th graders.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so that was competitive because the physicality difference. And then I think sixth, seventh grade, I started playing in the rec league at the parks. Eighth grade, I played on my first like real AAU team.
Okay. What team was that?
Atlanta Celtics.
Oh, so you was with the Celtics when
I was with Coach James first. And they had, you know, some kids that Pittsburgh community, they're tougher kids, physical. Mm-hmm. And so I could really shoot the ball, but I couldn't handle it yet. I wasn't tough enough, you know, rebounding yet. So I ended up playing with another Celtics team for 15 and under, which happened to be my coach the rest of the time, which is Winfred Jordan. Mm. And Winfred Jordan runs Atlanta Express.
Yep.
And, you know, they produce people like Anthony Edwards, mm-hmm. Steph Castle, yep. You know, from UConn. And so, you know, me and his son, Pierre Jordan, you know, we grew up playing together and, you know, we grew in the game that way.
Yeah, just took off.
Yeah.
Those games, the AAU scene, pretty similar, but a little bit different than just playing competitively, man. What were some of those moments that you remember playing at that level with those players who were, you know, college level, or some of them were pros, especially from Atlanta?
Yeah, so for me, the first real experience was playing on that rec team at Sandtown. So Coach Knight. And Coach Knight was very similar to the Coach Knight that you know of and Bobby Knight. far as a very intense coach, you know, he loved hard, but he coached very hard too, you know. So for me, that was my first experience of a real team. And so after that experience and that, I didn't blink an eye to any other coach, you know. Mm. Like I just.
And your parents allowed you to go through that?
Oh, yeah.
What was their take? Like, trying to get an understanding, I think it's good for parents to hear this, is like, what did you think about your parents allowing you to have somebody tough on you that wasn't them?
Yeah, so one, you have to understand this about my parents. My mom was the youth minister at our church in the hood. Mm. So she was already, you know, she loved hard, but she was very disciplined, no nonsense. So respect and respect and authority, you know, that never was a question. Mm-hmm. And they weren't the ones to point the blame to anyone. So if I wasn't playing well, if I didn't play a lot, it never was, oh, coach should have did this. You're like, what did your coach say?
Yep.
You got to do better. You got to rebound more. You got to play better defense.
And what did that do for you? Now, looking back, right, we know what it did probably when you were younger, but really looking at it now, what did that do for you, that skills that you use in your life now?
I mean, it gave me the confidence to figure it out. Mm. Just to know, like, one, it's not the end all be all. And if you really want to do it, you got to sacrifice and you got to work hard and you can't just, it's not going to be us begging you to work. And they never had to beg me to work. They had to kind of beg me to come home and relax.
Seriously. 24-hour gym, I
yeah,
bet.
Yeah, like I would go from my private school game to the rec league game in the same day, right? And that would be twice a week. Then on the weekends, all I wanted to do was hoop. So it was like, they knew I loved it.
Yeah.
So that's why they didn't they didn't blink an eye to make the sacrifices that they had to, you know, to travel. Because, you know, at a certain point, everything financially is taken care of, but the travel is still a lot.
Yep.
And that time away from the crib is a lot. So,
yeah.
Yeah, so I'm thankful for their stance in that.
No, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Moving on to high school. So what was your experience in high school? You went on to play college ball, so how did that high school experience lead you to college?
Well, I was fortunate to go to a great high school, Westlake High, that's produced a lot of high-level athletes, like Pac-Man Jones and A.J. Moyer and Cam Newton, amongst others, Chuma Okeke and Raven Johnson, who just got her jersey retired from South Carolina. So, I mean, there was a standard of excellence there. So when I got there, they were good. They were a young team the year before, and they were returning their whole team. So they were this guy named A.J. Johnson, who was one of the best players I ever saw up to that point, and Jerome Burney, who went to Maryland. So they had size for position. They had elite athleticism. And then you got guys like Cam Newton coming off the bench and Keontae Tripp, who both NFL players.
Yeah. Hooping?
Yeah, yeah. So the physicality.
Yeah.
And then just the type of characters that we had on that team, you know, it just prepared us to be confident wherever we went. But, you know, just that area of Southwest Atlanta, so much talent, like Banneker High School, Creekside High School. So Creekside had Eric Berry, you know, and guys like that. But my very first game was packed wall to wall, you know. So that was my first experience in high school as a freshman on varsity. It's like standing room only, hot gym, dim lights, you know. And so that environment, that's what we became used to, and winning was, you know, expected. But the work that we put in practice, you know, that's the difference. And when you go somewhere else and they're not working and they're cutting corners, it's like, what is this? You know, so I think that prepared me for everything else.
Yeah.
And having to work, because I wasn't the best player by any means. So that's another thing. It's just that perspective, and it kept you humble and hungry. So. Yeah.
And so there's something to the method of sitting behind some people who are doing great, still playing varsity,
right,
and getting that opportunity and that experience. And how did that progress throughout your career? How did that move your sophomore and junior year, like being with that, getting that experience as a freshman, just to see, right? Like you said, the gym is packed wall to wall. You probably don't have as much pressure as the next person, but you're in that environment. And so how did that move you through the rest of your high school years to
Yeah, so, you know, progressing from a freshman where you're happy to get in the game, you hopefully we beat somebody by 25, 30, so coach can throw me in for 1 or 2 minutes, and maybe I get a shot up. And then sophomore year, there's more responsibility and more expectation from you because now you've gone through a year of practice. You've seen your team go to wars. You probably didn't participate as much, but you're locked in, you know, seeing the timeouts and the adjustments and the body language of people. But now your opportunity comes. Are you going to be ready? And how do you deal with failure? How do you deal with success? Do you get the big head because you hit a couple game winners? Like that, and that was kind of my case. I didn't get the big head, but I hit a couple game winners in some meaningful games. And so my confidence grew. I started getting scholarship offers. So,
what age did you start getting offers?
I think my sophomore year.
Your sophomore year?
Yeah, sophomore year. So, I think like Tulane and Southern Mississippi and then South Carolina, stuff like that. And it just, I saw the work that others were putting in. And to be honest, there were people that I thought were the best players ever, and they didn't get that same type of college, you know, recognition and offers. So, there was like a fear of, all right, I have a lot more work to do than I thought. And so, you know.
Let the fire under you.
Definitely, definitely.
And then, yeah, transitioning into, so freshman, sophomore year, and you have AAU going on as well, right?
Right.
And so how does that, those whole worlds collide into you getting an opportunity to play college basketball, and how did that decision, you know, come about?
Yeah, so AAU at that point, you know, we were Adidas team, but you still would play other Nike teams because, you know, we have like Kingwood Classic and Bob Gibbons and those staple events where you would see the best of the best. So I remember seeing Derrick Rose and Eric Gordon in the same backcourt and being like there's levels, you know,
right?
People like that. And then seeing the like the Lopez twins with EBO and DeMar DeRozan, you know, jumping out the gym, and Kevin Love and Brandon Jennings. And so, you know, you see that, all right, different regions of the country play in different ways. Like, you got the Florida guys, Kenny Boyden, and what's my man, Brandon Knight, guys like that. And then our rival was Pump and Run with Drew Holiday. Mm-hmm. And so in that organization, you got Klay Thompson on the second team.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like, crazy. That's where you see the California guys are skilled, can shoot. Then you see, like, Detroit. You know, they have their own style. So it's just, it brings your awareness up of how big basketball really is.
How do you survive?
You got to keep working.
Yeah.
You got to keep working. You can't get too high, too low. But I think having the right people around you, that's going to keep you humble.
Who are those people for you?
Well, my parents, I mean, we're grounded in faith. So I think that's the foundation of everything. So we're not contingent on, you know, what people think of us. We already know what's the main thing for us and what's our motivation. So having that established early, kind of, you have a different.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
What type of confidence? But then being around people that believed in what your potential is. So I know how that felt when, you know, as a 6'7" shooter, that wasn't accepted as much, especially when you have the ability to jump and they think you should dunk on everybody's head and stop shooting so many threes, except people see that that's actually a skill set.
Yeah.
And that's what makes you different from everyone. And they could teach you how to be intentional. So some people, they don't understand something. They talk down on it, and they discourage it. And therefore, with kids, you can see how their confidence is shaking.
Yes.
So, like, coaches say, no pick and rolls, because they don't know how to teach pick and rolls. Man. Right? Or just something as simple like that.
Yeah, you touching my hot buttons. I hate that stuff, man. Like, if you're going to coach, learn so you can coach.
Yeah.
The game is the game. And, yeah, man, that's – woo. That stuff gets on my nerves to this day. So how do you instill that confidence in the kids now? Like, you know, you're taking that, like, you knew that you can shoot and people saying don't shoot or whatever it is. How do you coach through that if somebody has a broken jumper?
Well, I'm fortunate enough where I've been blessed. You know, basketball's taken me all over the world. You've competed against different types of players. You've played with different types of players. So you can see tendencies in kids. Mm-hmm. Especially in, like, when you love the game. So since you're 10 years old, this is all you've been doing. You recognize things very quickly.
Yeah.
Sometimes kids do things by mistake that's great. Mm. And they don't even know it. So it's our job to bring it out and show them how to be intentional. And how do you actually work at this? Like, how do you work on your footwork? Okay, I get you love it. I get you're in the gym 3 hours. But are you being productive in those 3 hours? Are you doing it the right way?
Yeah.
And so that's the thing for me as a coach, is like getting them to do the little things right.
Yeah.
And not get bored with the basics. Because, like, kids come in and just start shooting threes. I'm like, bro.
Steph Curry does it?
No, he doesn't.
Thank you. Okay.
No, he doesn't. He comes in, he gets his form. He gets his form shooting. And they take pride in those little things. And so just helping them understand, okay, I get where the end goal you want it to be, but how do you get there? I get you want to be able to pull it from 30, but how do you get there? Yeah. So, not discouraging them, just like in school, you can't go to eighth grade until you go through first, second, third, and so on and so forth. Same thing with basketball.
Right.
Work your way up.
So it's a development system. It's a development process. Interesting fact about you: you were the sixth man.
Yeah.
And pretty much your whole life, you said.
Pretty much. Yeah. It's only 2 years in my career I probably was the best player on my team.
When was that?
Maybe eighth grade. It wasn't in high school. No years in high school was I the best player on my team. Junior year, kind of, but not really, because I was inconsistent. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't really have my identity as a player yet. College, not really. Like, I had the potential to be the best player, but again, inconsistent in my habits. So when my best was needed, it wasn't always there. Sometimes it was, wasn't always there. And then it takes away from your leadership ability when everybody witnesses, all right, you're up and down with how hard you work.
Yeah.
So then people ain't gonna listen to you. Yeah. So I think definitely I wasn't the best player in the G League. You know, I battled being active, you know, so meaning there's 12 active players and 15 on the roster. So those three, if you ain't in that 12 or whatever the number is, you're not suiting up.
Right.
You know, so I had to just to fight and practice and my individuals through injuries, you know, just to get on the floor.
Right.
Now, when I got on the floor, I did my thing, you know, because it's a sense of desperation at that point because you want to get paid, you want to have good film so you can move on and get better opportunities.
Yeah.
But I think that's the motivation. Like when you see people that at that level, it's clear, all right, he's different.
Right.
Like I was fortunate to play with some very, very good people at my position that I could learn from, you know. And so when it's my turn to lead, I was able to do that. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
And then just talk about your experience as a sixth man, like the mindset. So I was a sixth man too, most of my high school till my senior year and all of college. And most of my AAU glory days was middle school for me. This is back in the day when like we only had two teams in our whole area for AAU. So, you know, I know what my job was and I knew why I was good at being a sixth man. Cause first of all, I didn't care like, oh cool, I don't have to start. Cool, right. No pressure on me to perform. I'm gonna just go in here and do me and then be that spark off the bench and be that support and kind of take that Jamal Crawford mindset. It's
facts.
Like, yo, I'm a own this.
Yeah.
And so, you know, how did that help you throughout your career? And what was, you know, did you have a mindset about being the sixth man even when you were in high school and college?
Well, I think it was mostly testing in AAU.
Okay.
Because I think, you know, you get recruited to go to other teams. Like the team that I was in between was Georgia Stars, which is a Nike team. And my parents told me, like, no, you need to stick this out. You stick this out. They want you because they were combining. So we had two Celtics teams, 16U. Two very good teams. Like on my team, Chris Singleton, very, very good. Delwan Graham, very good. And then the other team was Tony Mitchell and Cashmere Wright.
Man.
Yeah, Tony Mitchell, Cashmere Wright. So 17U, we combined the teams. So now we have Derek Favors, we have Howard Tompkins, Chris Singleton, my team, and then, you know, role players. Because you got the big three, and that's fine. But you got the role players. So now, do you sulk in your feelings when you don't play a lot? Can you still be a good teammate?
Right.
Right? Because I'm a shot maker. So I'm a six-man shot maker, which is harder than just being a six-man hustle man. Yeah. No offense to the people with high motors.
Right.
Got me? It's just shot maker. That's what I do. I can play defense. I can rebound. You know, when I put my mind to it, but I put my sting in making shots. No doubt about it, you know. So it was like I could see the difference in when I was pissed because coach didn't put me in. I wouldn't make any shots when I would come in. Or I would take bad shots because I was so frustrated. So then my rhythm is thrown off. So then when I kind of just was the best teammate I could be, I actually got scholarships from my demeanor on the bench and my ability to come in and still make shots.
How do you know that?
Well, that's what they said. They said, we appreciate how you carried yourself because we actually don't even know why the coach took you out. Because there were certain instances where I would come in and hit two threes back to back, boom, 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 and play good defense on somebody like Jrue Holiday, who's, you know, a great offense is going to be the great defense. So, but I didn't hang my head. I shook everybody's hands, still clapping. And so they did mention that when we talked. And
character.
So I carried that with me.
Yep. Yeah. So that character takes you, man. I can't tell you how many kids don't understand that, especially the younger ones. Like, your character matters even more. Because if you can hoop, you can hoop.
Yeah.
You'll be on the stage to hoop. You know, you'll be in the EYBL, Adidas, whatever place you're going to be. But then they're judging your character.
But that takes you past the playing days. Because right now, it's all relationships.
Yeah.
So if you treat people like, you know, treat people bad, they're not going to do any favors or look out for you or even remember you in a kind light.
Yeah.
You know, depending on how you carry yourself, especially when you're quote unquote on top in certain situations. or you're the man in certain situations. How do you treat people when you're the man? How do you treat people when you're the help? You know, it's like, that's what people remember. And the mindset of being prepared for your opportunities is key. And that's what I tell kids all the time. Like, hey, you over here pouting. I don't even want to put you back in the game now. Like, it is what it is. I want somebody that's ready to help however long or however, you know, that we need you to win. Right. So I think they're starting to understand that, especially with our program. Like, we're establishing that culture.
No, I love it. And that's what it takes, a coach and a leader, to establish that, not be afraid, even if it's your good player, to use that bench as a lesson, a teaching lesson of how this game is. It's to build character at the end of the day and build, like you said, opportunities for after when the ball stops bouncing. So, no, I like that. So your transition to college, how did your college decision come up? Where did you go to college and what was that experience like?
Got you. So I went to Winthrop University in Rock Hill, South Carolina. excuse me. And my decision came down to who prioritized me from the jump. So it was between Winthrop and a few other schools like Xavier and UAB and Central Florida. And at that time, you know, Winthrop was consecutive conference champions in the NCAA tournament. They beat Notre Dame in the first round. So they had Greg Marshall as a coach, who ended up going to Wichita State and doing great things there. But I didn't want to be like a secondhand package deal type of recruit.
Right.
You know, so that's kind of how I narrowed it down. I didn't want to wait until the last signing period. And so that's kind of how we narrowed it down. And then the staff, you know, they were just genuine people, men of faith, you know. So just the foundation of what they believed and what me and my family believed aligned. And so I'm grateful for what I learned and that experience there. Yeah. You know, so.
Any memorable moments, memorable games, and what was your college career like, if you can sum it up in a few sentences?
Yeah. So, I mean, I redshirted my first year. And then my redshirt freshman year, we won the conference championship. We lost in a play-in game to Arkansas Pine Bluff in a game that we should have won. But, I mean, in that year, I hit a couple of game winners, a couple of, you know, big go-ahead baskets. So, you know, my confidence was as a shot maker, of course. Sophomore year, had some very good games. I think we had some injuries and, like, suspensions early in the year, so I had an opportunity to play a little bit more. And I had some great games in the preseason NIT versus, like, VCU, who went to the Final Four that year.
Okay, yeah.
And so I kind of showcased my ability to get hot and, you know, score 17 or 20 and a half, you know.
Oh, man.
So good games like that. And then I started having little health issues over my back and ended up having to have surgery. Mm. And so I changed the way I played a little bit. Had to become smarter and more efficient. And then we had a coaching change from Randy Peel to Pat Kelsey. Pat Kelsey is the head coach at Louisville now.
Yep.
Great guy. He was at College of Charleston, did great things there. And so I was grateful for what I learned from both of those coaches. And then from there, you know, it was time to make a decision on how do I want to take the next steps. So when Pat Kelsey came in, I had a decision. I could have been a grad transfer or not. But, you know, I believed in what his vision was, and I'm glad I stayed and played under him. And then I had some opportunities afterwards to work out for a few teams. But I ended up taking my first deal in Mexico.
Okay.
Because the money, you know, the money was
that's
solid.
What you're doing.
Yeah, it was solid. But my mom was battling cancer at that time, so it was a little difficult for me to be away. It was a little more on the shady side of, you know, delayed payments and things like that, you know. So that was my first experience there. So I came home, wanted to be with my mom. I was able to work out for some more teams, for their G League teams. I ended up playing in LA.
Okay.
Which was, you know, great decision, great place that a lot of people wanted to play.
Right.
Yes,
right.
So I was fortunate to be selected, you know, for that team, you know.
How does one deal with that, right? You're at this pivotal point in your life where you're moving from college to the pros, right?
Yeah.
Something we all dream about as hoopers. And then you're dealing with this family thing, your mom, you know, and battling cancer.
Yeah.
What's your mindset going into that, and how did you balance being a support for your mom and also continuing your career?
Yeah, I mean, that's the situations where faith is tested, for real. Because, I mean, you're literally alone in a different country. And it's not the most luxurious, you know, living situation. And then the wear and tear on your body. So it's just all these elements are going on. So you have to just lean and pray and stay grounded and, like, stay as disciplined as possible. And just be led, you know, by what's right for you. Mm-hmm. And so for me at that point, I felt it that it was time for me to come back,
yeah.
You know. And from there, it's just I have to control what I can control. So everything my mom was beyond my control. Mm-hmm. You know, all I could do is pray and be a great son and trust that God's will is going to be done at that point. So from there, you just did my best and channeled that energy into working on my game and my body. And, you know, it took me where it did.
Yeah. And so you had to come out here for the L.A. workout, or how did that?
It actually was in North Carolina. Bob McKinnon was the coach, and I think he's from Durham-Raleigh area. And so I changed agents. I had an agent right out of college. You know, great guy. Just didn't work out as far as what I needed versus what his vision was. And I ended up being with Jamie Knox, and Jamie, you know, set that up. And his relationships are great across the board. So he was able to get me in the door to work out, and so the work spoke for itself, and you know.
So then that was the Defenders.
Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Cobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
What was it?
It was a Defender.
The LA Defenders, yeah. Then. Okay.
Yep. So it was Bob McKinnon. It was Thomas Scott. It was Luke Walton on that coaching staff.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so great experiences there.
I bet. And so, yeah, so what was that like playing in the G League? And this is before the G League. This
it was D League.
It was the D. D-League. I was like, yeah, it was the D League then, actually. Yeah. That's what I was about to say. It's like when it was a little less funded, is the word I'm going to use, right?
Yeah, so, yeah.
You know, you probably may have had a better experience in college, travel and all that, than you did in the D League at the time.
Right. Well, I mean, we were playing in L.A.
Ah.
Yeah. And we were practicing in the same facility as the Lakers. So for me, it was a little different because my friends were on the Lakers, like Jordan Hill, one of my best friends to this day, and Jody Meeks. Like, we all worked out together in the summer. So it was a little bit more comfortable having those guys there. And then I had some great teammates. Like, I had Jamario Moon, I had Manny Harris.
He
still got bounced. I don't know how he does it. Manny Harris, Terrence Williams, Sean Williams. Brandon Costner, like, it was a lot of great. Kareem Rush was on that team, you know, so I had a lot of great vets, a lot of talented people to learn from. So that was one of the best years, you know, just being as a rookie and being in that environment, you know. Yeah. So.
And how long did you stay in the I'm gonna call it the G League now. So yeah, how long did you stay, and what transitioned you from being a professional basketball player, and did you play anywhere else after that, I want to say, and into what you do now?
Yeah, so I played in the D League 2.5 seasons. So after my first year there, I ended up going to the Sixers organization, which was Delaware, which is probably my most productive year because I had a little bit more opportunity with minutes. But again, great team, great organization, living situation and everything, great coach. Coach there was Kevin Young, who was the associate head coach for Phoenix up until last year. Now he's the head coach at BYU. Mm-hmm. So learned a lot of useful things that I carry over into my coaching style now, just because in that Sixers era, that was like the process. So they were experimenting with the pace and space, 7 seconds or less. And so I was able to, as a player, benefit from that style of play, how to manufacture open threes and get those corner threes and flare screens and pistol action and all that good stuff that I learned and matchup zones. And then guys like DJ Silly, Jared Cunningham, Malik Wayans, Victor Rudd, Drew Gordon. So, you know, great. Those are my guys to this day. And then I played in Fort Wayne, Pacers organization. Mm-hmm. And then at that point, you know, I had enough leverage to get, you know, decent job opportunities overseas, you know. And so from there, it was just a matter of my body holding up. So for me, already having back surgery, already having torn plantar fascia and things like that, like my Achilles and broken foot, and like my body started wearing down.
Oh, you went through it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was a lot of miles.
This from having all the bounce back in the day? What do you think?
The bounce, I stopped using the bounce after my sophomore year in college. Like, I would jump on occasion, but it was more getting to space and shooting, you know. And then from there, it was just wear and tear. And some of it is just not enough preparation for what's needed at high-level basketball. And so it came a point where I was home. I think this was maybe 2018. And I was still getting good job opportunities. But I was working out with the trainer in Woodland Hills. And one of my OGs was like, hey, man, you got to come check out this facility. You know, my man just built this facility, state of the art, yada, yada, yada. I was like, all right, cool, we're going to pull up. And we're here, we're touring the facility, which happened to be Sports Academy. And we're back on court five, that corner court. And me and Victor Rudd are there, and there's a net. And he's like, man, we're watching one trainer, but he's looking over at another court. He's like, man, he's getting those kids right over there. And I'm looking, I said, yeah, he is. He's like, man, he kind of talked like you too. I said, it looks like one of my homies from the crib. He looked a little slimmer than I remember, but it looks like him. And so we walk past the net and we're walking. And we both looking at each other, and he just do like this. And it was AJ Moyer from Westlake High, who was like a big brother. And I haven't seen him since, at this point, since maybe 2012, right? And this is 2016, maybe, 15, 16. Give each other a big hug, you know, catch up, you know, good to see you, yada, yada, yada. Because he had a severe injury. He was playing in Germany.
Yeah.
And so I haven't talked to him since that incident. So I was happy to see him and know that he was doing well. Got his information. I started training with him the very next week.
Wow.
Yep. Training with him the very next week. And that changed the trajectory of my life. That one, me coming out here to visit this facility, changed my whole outlook.
Wow.
Yep. So.
And that's when you retired?
No.
Oh, okay.
I still play. I was still getting good contracts. So this is 2015, 16. 2018, I was home, because this is after I broke my foot. My niece was in ninth grade, London. She was at Westlake High, ironically, out here, Westlake Village.
Went to Westlake.
Yeah, and his wife was pregnant. So he couldn't coach his eighth grade boys team. And so I was training with him. I was about maybe 75%. This is maybe November. So I was planning on going to like somewhere in Latin America for the summer. And so he's just like, hey, can you coach my eighth grade boys team? Because I can't travel with them. And so he's coaching with West Coast Elite. On his team at this time is Shashay Henderson, Isaiah Sherrard, ZZ Clark, and a couple other very, very talented kids. So I'm like, cool, I'll come in and coach. And went on a few trips with them. Enjoyed that experience. That's my first time ever coaching. You know, I wasn't training kids at that point. And fast forward to Kobe Inc. gets involved with Sports Academy and becomes Mamba Sports Academy. So fast forward to February, you know, it's closer to when his wife is about to have the baby. And he's like, man, I got to take this time off when she had his baby. Like, you know my stuff. He said, I'll outline it for you. You put your little twist on it. You love kids. Like, train these kids for me while I take this time off. Man. And so he put me in contact. I had my interview in the same room. You know, I started off doing small group sessions. And he came back 2 weeks later. I had my own full slate of clients. So I'm training. It's time for me to get ready to leave. So this is about April, May. And he lets me know that Kobe wants us to bring the boys team to practice with his girls team on my birthday. Yeah, June 2nd. Yeah, on my birthday. So I'm like, go to Argentina or practice with Cole? Right.
Yeah.
So you know what I decided. You know what I decided. And so, you know, I had my brief experience with Cole from my time with the Defenders.
Okay.
I was fortunate enough to rebound for him for a time because before that, he never spoke. You know, so you pass him in the hallway, he just laser focused, you know. And so I had somewhat of a relationship there. And we had that practice. He was like, all right, y'all got him. He sat down and we ran the practice. And so we did that every other weekend, you know, throughout the summer. Most, you know, blessed time ever.
But
yeah. And that's when I decided, like, all right, I don't think this is a coincidence.
Right.
You know, maybe I just turned the page sooner than I wanted to. And, you know, of course, that's a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah.
But I was fortunate to have my niece and my extended niece and Mariah to pour that energy into.
Mm-hmm.
And then other kids in the area that, you know, were introduced. And, you know, I was able to just turn that page.
Man, you know? That's awesome. I mean, God sends moments and people in our life at a certain time and gives us that opportunity to make that decision.
Yep.
And I'm sure you're grateful for it now, right? See how it, what it turned into. And and we're going to talk about where you are now, right? Starting off as AJ's a help me trainer, right?
Yep.
To being the director of basketball here and all the great things that you've grown this place into in the last few years. What was your most memorable experience with Kobe while being able to be, you know, just around him and his presence?
Yeah, I think it's just having those genuine conversations. Just, he was such an open book as a coach, you know, and anytime something sparked someone's interest around him, you know, he would really pour into that. And I think one of the best experiences is when we had the mini camp with the players here that Phil Handy ran, and they had the best of the best trainers throughout the country come. But funny, this, I don't think I've ever told this one, but they had photographers coming, right? And so as employees, they wanted us to get out the way. They wanted us to kind of like sit in the bleachers. And I was like, all right, cool. So I'm sitting back in the bleachers and I see Kobe looking around and I didn't know who he was looking for. And he waved me over. So I'm like, oh, Kobe waved me over, I'm going.
Right.
And so I was able to sit next to him while they were working out and just talk about things and talk about concepts.
Mm.
And I think those type of conversations about teaching the game, I think were the most memorable thing ever.
Yeah.
And just having those spirited, you know, genuine feedback from him.
Yeah.
Like, it was memorable. So
that's awesome, man.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And so you're transitioning to being a trainer, having a book of clients, retiring.
Yeah.
What was the moment that you actually accepted that you were retired? Do you remember that actual moment? And I'm going to say that burden lifted, because it's a burden sitting on you for a long time, right?
Yeah.
That it y'all should be hooping.
It wasn't the first year of me training, because I could still really play at a high level. And I could still really shoot the ball at a high level. And so it kind of was difficult, because the way the game has gone and how 7 and 8 three-point attempts in the game is widely accepted.
Yeah.
You know, that's where I kind of was like, all right, do I need to go back and work out and play? Because those opportunities were coming.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, it's probably a year after.
Yeah.
So maybe, it probably wasn't even until COVID that I was at peace with not playing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man. So now, where have you grown this place into? What kind of opportunity, or, you know, you and your team? And did you see, envision this place having this much impact on this community and the basketball community when, you know, the first time you walked in here and started working here?
I mean, I can't say that I did. I mean, I saw how beautiful of a place this was. I saw the impact it had on the basketball world as Mamba Sports Academy. I know with the tragedy ignited in people in their thought process and Mamba mentality. But I knew this community, you know, they were investing in the youth's future. So if their kids love something, it was evident that they would invest in that. And then we had high level people. Like AJ Moy is one of the best as far as mentors and basketball minds. So them having him Like, that was already powerful within itself, but he was only one person. Yeah. Then it started to attract other people like that, like Gerald Boston, one of the best as far as teaching the young people the game. Yeah. And so we had the people, we had the beautiful facility, so it was like, it was inevitable, you know, and it was just, I was fortunate enough to get that opportunity, you know, to have leadership in it, but that had to be earned over time,
yeah.
You know, and I think people saw how much effort I put into it, and other people that had the same vision, they put forth so much effort too. It was just only a matter of time where it clicked, you know. So I can't really say it was because of me. It was just, it was going to happen,
right?
You know.
What's the toughest part about growing a basketball organization?
Patience. Patience, the right people, being able to effectively communicate, you know, the vision and how you would get to the end goals that everybody wants. But ultimately, it's patience in the process.
Yeah. And I've seen your leadership grow from the last 2 years tremendously. What would you tell somebody in your position, right, starting in a position where they see opportunity ahead of them? Mm-hmm. Whether that's as a basketball player or in an organization, a basketball organization, or whatever, wherever place they're in life, how do you grow your leadership and the people around you so effectively in a short amount of time?
I think you got to do the work before you get the title. So you got to go over and beyond. You can't do the bare minimum and expect people to give you anything. But also, you can't undercut the leadership ahead of you. Sometimes people think they're going to advance by, you know, talking down or not supporting leadership, when from the book that you recommended me, 360 Degree Leadership, you can lead from the middle. Mm-hmm. You can do your part and you can influence others around you, you know, to do great work by being that example. So I think it's just being disciplined in your routine, being persistent, but letting your work speak for itself and letting others exalt you and not you beat on your chest saying, look what I did. You know, I think over amount of time, you keep doing that work, it'll speak for itself.
100%. And I think the thing I've seen you do is you truly invest in the people. Like, you really try to build relationships and foster those relationships, and for nothing. You're not looking for anything out of it, whether it's a kid that you're working with.
Right.
And, you know, I've seen you do shooting lessons where, they're slow paced and you are patient, because these kids think, oh, I'm being patient with this trainer trying to help me. Yeah, we got to be patient too, because you ain't listening.
Facts.
you ain't doing what you said or what we're telling you to do, right? And so I've seen your patience in that, and then your patience with your team, and just being around me when you were actually at CORE too. Let's not forget about this.
Sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
Thank you.
Learned a lot.
And just being a part of the environment and knowing how to impact it without changing it, right?
Right.
And it slowly turns into what, like, we do two-foot finishes first. Like, all right, so Gideon, let me tell you a story. Listen, Gideon came in and was like, came in the court like, hey, man, what's all this same hand, same foot finish stuff, right? Like, these kids off balance, they gonna break their legs. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Man, I got Sky Clark, Mike Price. Like, what you talking about? I got dudes that came through this program. And he was like, bro, it's progression. It's progression. And then, so the first time we talked, it wasn't a talk. I didn't want to listen to him. But then we actually sat down, like, let me actually listen to Gideon. I think he knows something about this. And it probably took a month of just real conversation of, hey, this is why, this is how we can do it. You can still do your one-foot finishes if you want to, but they got to do two-foot finishes first, and they have to make sure they're doing it the proper way. So, man, I appreciate that. And that conversation with you has opened my mind way more to other people, the other trainers that we work with, to really listen to them.
Yeah.
And for me, like, hey, actually, we made you part of the team because you have something to give to this team, not just to listen and do exactly what the curriculum says.
Right.
No, let's build, let's develop. And so it's changed a lot. Like, you gotta come by CORE whenever you
gotta come pull up.
It's changed a whole lot. A lot more, you know, our impact is skills training, but we're like, man, people are losing how to play the game,
right,
and how to do it properly. And man, you sparked that in us, just so you know, man.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that leadership, because most leaders aren't gonna be open to change like that.
Yeah.
You know, especially when you built something.
Yeah,
no, from it's the ground
tough,
up.
Man, it's made us so much better, and you could see we see our kids when they playing games, they're playing the right way. Yep. And the coaches are like, man, they're ready. And so thank you for sparking that, man.
That's true
leadership right there. So what's next for, I want to talk about coaching in the EYBL, right? You know, coming from a high-level AAU program yourself, and then building one here. And on the girls' side, you know, where did that love for the game on the girls' side of the game come from? And how different is the girls' game from the boys' game, too?
Yeah, no, for sure. So the love for the girls' game, two places. My niece, London Gamble, and then spending that time with Cole. I think those two factors, you know, kind of I'm all in on the girls' game. And I respect it at the highest level. And being in this pocket of Ventura County, it's a lot of talent on the girls' end. And no disrespect to the boys, because you have some boys' talent too, but per capita, you know, as they say with statistics, there's a lot higher concentration of future college players that are girls than guys in this area. And so with that, girls are different because they listen. Guys listen too, but it's like they have to be intentional. Sometimes guys don't have to be intentional until they get to college, if they're gifted.
Right.
The ones that aren't physically gifted and not super skilled, sometimes you don't get super skilled if you're not intentional. And so I love that part of it. Sports Academy Swish was originally Cal Swish. OG Russ Davis, who I talked to this morning and respect so much, and as many people do across the country, he started Cal Swish. And he's been the coach at Vanguard and is, you know, Hall of Fame coach there. And he's had numerous, you know, All-Americans and high-level players, but he's been respected as one of the best grassroots coaches because of how he gets his teams to play team basketball. And so I was fortunate enough that he thought enough of me, and John Spots thought enough of me to, you know, carry that torch. And so for us, we've been fortunate enough to have some extremely talented players, you know, since we've been Sports Academy Swish.
Like who?
Like Juju Watkins, you know, in the first year. And in the second year, you know, we've had numerous Division I players, but the names that y'all know you will know, Juju Watkins, McKinley Randolph, you know, the two McDonald's All-Americans. But there's been so many other players, you know, that has come through the program before the merger with Sports Academy Swish. And, you know, I think the ones that go on and represent with their character and their hard work, you know, mean just as much as the ones that are McDonald's All-Americans and, you know, arguably generational talents. But, for instance, there's few kids that, like Avery Kane, her commitment, she would drive down from Santa Maria, 6 a.m. every Saturday and Sunday.
Man.
You know, and that's a testament to her and her parents.
Right.
You know, to sacrifice that. Brooklyn Shamblin, you know, a warrior, absolute warrior. You know, those are kids that I've been fortunate enough to build a relationship with their families and work with them before they were even with Swish. And so when the opportunity came, you know, they helped take a step forward.
Yeah.
They were game changers for us. And now that we have the youth, the young ladies on the youth side and the boys, I think that's probably my best part of the job.
Yeah.
Is working with those younger teams.
When you say younger youth, elementary, middle school age? Where
elementary.
Elementary.
So boys, we start at third. Girls, we start at fifth, but we have a few fourth graders and third graders, you know. And there's some of them are multi-sport athletes, so they pop in and out. But, like, right now, I work closely with our fifth grade boys. Love that group. Yeah, they're so much fun to coach. Like, so that's, like I said, that's the best part of the job. But overall, at the highest level, the EYBL is the best platform for high school girls. And they have all the shoe circuits are great, but, of course, Nike is just elite in their reach, you know, and how they're able to do things and then the talent that they attract. So the best coaches, like you have to do your homework. You have to do your scouting reports because they will carve you up, you know.
Right.
and just elite athletes with size for position and skill, you know, from all ages. You got Kalina Smith pulling, you know, two steps over half court.
Crazy.
You know, and they have athletic bigs and wings and, like, so it's just a lot of different, like, Caitlin Clark's organization, All Iowa Attack. Like, she's not the only one. They breed them like that. You know what I mean? So much respect to everybody in the EYBL and all those directors that they show a lot of love, you know, Boo Williams, you know, the OG. everybody's so supportive. So just learning a lot from being in that environment as well.
Yeah. And what's the biggest difference between high-level boys basketball and high-level girls basketball at the high school level?
Well, high-level boys, the size for position, the athleticism, you know.
You keep saying size for position. Explain that, because I think a lot of 5'9 people don't understand that we're trying to be point guards out here. So got talk you. About that.
Okay. So what I mean by size for position, you are what you could defend. You are what you could defend and what you rebound for. And then offensively, you know, everybody, every wing wants to be a point guard and every big wants to be a wing, right? Some of them are actually able to do that. Like for me, I was a real 6'7 shooting guard. So defensively, was I guarding point guards all the time? No. Could I do that for stretches? Yes. But also, are you able to think the game and facilitate for your team and pick your spots and throw people open and execute down the stretch in the half court? Are you able to fight over pick and rolls? Are you able to play hard and communicate and make shots? So for guys, point guards are now they're between you could be a smaller point guard.
Right.
But they also are 6'2", 6'5", 6'6", that are real point guards, meaning they're really running their team.
Yeah.
They are really pressuring the ball full court. They're navigating pick and rolls. They're stringing out pick and rolls. Right? Mm-hmm. They're throwing people open. Yeah. Then you have shooting guards that are really lasers, like Michael Porter Jr. He's a laser.
Yeah.
You know, he's able to put the ball on the floor. He's able to defend. And then you have skilled bigs. So, yes, they're big, but they can do everything. They can dribble, pass, and shoot.
Right.
They can operate out the high post. They can shoot from the top of the key. So it's just, are you able to play good basketball and do that?
Yeah.
And that's the pressure that the international game is putting on us.
Right.
Because they're not only skilled, but they actually have, for the most part, high character people and good teammates. Mm-hmm. Playing the right way.
Yeah, with high IQ. You know?
Yeah, so I think the size for position, people have to take that into account for the people that are like 6'1",
yeah,
playing at 3'4".
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And then so, yeah, okay, so going back to boys and now and the girls' side. So boys is, you know, size for position, athleticism,
yeah,
those things. What about for the girls' side, high-level girls' side?
Well, girls' side, size for position is still same, a real thing. Just like one of my good friends, Mo, he brought his team out last weekend. FBC United, one of the best teams in the country, no doubt. But across the board, they had a point guard, Aubrey, who's like 5'9", 5'10", but it's 6'1", 6'2", 6'2", you know, 6'3", and 6'4", but they're almost positionless. Mm. They can all guard the wing. They can all post up. They can all shoot.
Man.
Right. And so that's where the high-level girls game, size for position and skill, but then also feel and understanding. So certain people might not have all the athletic gifts, but they're not wasting movements. They're not wasting dribbles. They're efficient moving the ball. They can shoot the ball. They can finish, you know, so they can play winning basketball.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, when you have a 5'9 player on a 6'1", 6'2 player that's doing the same thing, like when you watch the women's NCAA tournament and you look at the size of those players making those moves, it doesn't look the same on TV, but when you see it in person,
oh yeah,
it's a lot different when you're fighting over a flare screen from a 6'4", you know, strong forward versus a 5'9".
Yep.
Yeah, so it's just
yeah. Yeah, that length. I heard people talking about Bronny and how slow he was shooting in the the combine. Did you hear about that? He
made
a bunch of shots. They're like, he's shooting so slow, he's not coming to gym.
Yep.
It may look slow. That man hit all those shots every day of pre-draft as well. It's like, yeah, people's perception of what the game really is until you get on the floor. I have to tell parents all the time of the 6'1", barely athletic shooter, hey, Oh, I think he could play EYBL or circuit. Come on. Go ahead. Go to one game and see if you can survive and see the difference.
Now, is it possible?
Absolutely. Yes. I don't want to take anything from anybody.
You got to be a dog on defense. You got to be a dog on defense. You have to be a disruptor on defense. You have to be able to play the right way. The ball has to flow.
Yep.
And you got to make shots.
That's it.
And it's hard to be contingent on making shots.
Man.
So what value are you going to add outside of that?
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. If you had one word or short phrase to explain your relationship with basketball, what would it be?
Ooh, that's a loaded question. One phrase. I don't know. I think I've poured enough into myself in the game where it doesn't, I've never worked. I've never had a job where it hasn't felt like work.
So like your resource.
Yeah.
It's been a resource.
It's been a huge resource and a great vehicle, you know, to still chase my dreams and live within my dreams. Like, this is a dream. I tell people this is the second best job after playing in the league.
Right.
And I'm just saying that because I didn't play in the league, so, you know.
Yeah.
But as a dream, that's what I would want. I would love to be able to work with kids all day.
Right.
And teach them the game and help, you know, be a resource to their future, whatever they want to do, using the basketball as the great equalizer, because we come from different walks of life. We believe different things, but basketball is the great equalizer. So I think that's the blessing. So I don't know what phrase you take from that. That was a little ramble.
No, I think you said it. Your resource, and you said your resource and your vehicle.
Yeah.
There you go. Your resource and your vehicle. I like that.
Yes, sir.
I like that. Awesome, man. We're going to hop into our next segment. It's Fix the Net. We normally have a little hoop here that is not here, and you actually get to fix the net, but we're just going to go ahead and move forward.
Got it.
A misconception about yourself or the game that you want to make clear to people?
Let me do the game first and then I'll do myself second. So the misconception about the game is that the more time you spend with the trainer, the better off you'll be. I think that's a misconception. I think sometimes, I'm not saying people are stealing money, but.
No, people stealing money, I'll say it. Yeah, you don't want to. Yeah, people stealing money.
People are stealing money, yeah. But I think we don't focus enough on doing the little things right to get real value out of being with the trainer.
Yeah.
Now, some trainers will hold you accountable to the smallest detail. Some aren't able or willing to risk, you know, correcting a high-level player. But too many workout warriors. So they think, oh, well, they work so hard and they train this much time with their trainer. Why aren't they playing or why aren't they doing well? It's because they're not able to put it into context to know why and what moves they do where or how to be disciplined, shot discipline, how to be consistent and make adjustments in real time without the downward spiral, you know, and the self-doubt and the looking over. Yeah, so I think that's the one misconception is that you just need to spend time with your trainer. No, you need to have a plan. You need to stick to it.
Talk about it.
Yeah, so I think that's the thing.
It's a team. It's a team that should be around you.
Yeah.
Guiding you through that career.
Yeah, so you should
Your trainer's part of it.
Right.
But you got to have a coach. You got to have film sessions. You got to have your recovery. You got to have all these things that allow you to follow a plan that could put you in the best position for your goals.
Yeah.
And, man, that is what I'm creating, just so you know.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I'm creating is, hey, for all those that only watch the Instagram trainers and think you could do a move and be good at basketball, nah.
Yeah.
There's so much more. That's why only 0.03% of high school players play in it. 0.03, not even 1% play in the NBA.
Yeah.
0.03% of high school players, and probably less now with the portal.
Yeah.
Probably way less. So,
right.
No, man, I appreciate that. And then about yourself.
Ooh, okay. Misconception about myself is that
you had a jumper? No, I'm joking. He actually can't shoot, ladies and gentlemen. I ain't gonna do that.
Yeah, that's not a misconception. I think that's a
It's a fact.
That's a fact that you could take me up on, you know, given the opportunity. I think that I only care about the very good kids. Or that I only care about the very good UIBO girls players. And that's not true. And I think the people that know me and spend time in the gym know that that's not true.
Yeah.
I think sometimes people have experiences and they have wants and they have an idea of how things are supposed to go. And so when it doesn't go that way, you know, they have to, I wouldn't say make themselves feel better, but it has to be some type of blame.
That they make sense out of it.
Yeah, they got to make sense out of it.
And the way they make sense is by saying that, oh, you're spending time with the girls that are the high-level UIBO players, but those are also the serious girls.
Yeah, and I've heard the politics. I've heard the politics.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not it either. You know, as a coach, I am trying to win, but there's a thing called highest and best use. So you got to find a sustainable way for your team to play at the highest level. And it can't be contingent on just making shots or making tough shots.
Yeah.
You can manufacture great shots and the law of averages will work in your favor. But it's all how you defend as a team, how you rebound as a team, and your offensive flow. And so generally, coaches' favorite players are the players that play the right way and that are coachable.
Man.
Some people think coachable is because you looking at me. But if your body language is trash, hey, that energy, that's speaking.
Yep.
You know, that's speaking to us. And so I think having favorites is relative, you know.
Yeah.
Because there's kids that I personally love them like my niece. I love their family that have left because they haven't got what they wanted. And it's no hard feelings. There's no hard feelings because they're not my kids. And you got to do what you feel is best.
Right, right.
But it's like, we got to be able to tell you the truth.
Yes. Yeah. I think the part of coachability now that we didn't have coming up is your parents.
Yeah.
Do your parents allow me to coach you? Yeah. That's part of coachability. Now, we don't have to worry about that. Like you said, my mom was the same way. Like, what'd your coach say? Follow what they're saying.
Yeah.
To be coachable, I'm not saying you don't listen to your parents, but your parents have to allow you to just
be
coached.
They don't want them to fail, though. They don't want them to feel, oh, they're hurt. Their confidence is down. Hey, basketball is an emotional roller coaster.
Man.
So, you can't panic.
Right.
We're not doing anything detrimental to them.
Right.
Right. We're walking in love and how we're teaching them.
Right.
This is inevitable, though.
you're gonna go through it.
Yeah, you're gonna have bad games.
Get it done early. I tell people in the middle school, you know, all my kids are middle school. I'm like, hey, let them sit the bench now and feel
man.
That. Let them go through this.
You're gonna
struggle
have bad
now.
Days. You're gonna have a lot of bad days.
Because in high school, it gets worse.
Yeah.
In college, oh man, it's a business.
Yeah.
And you go pro, it really is a business. So it's a lifestyle.
But see, sometimes when we have a false sense of security and confidence in the wrong things early on, when we get in them deep waters, we ain't strong enough to swim on our own, you know? So it's like establishing that early for younger kids is going to be a great benefit to them down the road. But are you going to loosen up and get out the way and let it happen?
Yeah, man, we're going to start a whole new podcast. All right,
yeah.
Moving on. My Rushmore, okay? Your top four, you keep using this word, shot maker. Is there a difference from a shooter and a shot maker?
Shot maker.
Shot maker gets buckets.
Fact.
So your top four shot makers all time.
All time.
Who you got?
Does it have to be somebody that we watched in real time or just that we know?
That you know.
Because I can say Larry Bird. I know
Larry
Bird.
Oh, yeah, that's good. No,
Larry Bird is one of the best
100%.
Shot makers. It's hard to leave Mike off of there. It's hard to leave Kobe off of there. But I just have to think this out loud with you.
No, this is what this show is for.
Okay.
Speak your heart.
Because T-Mac.
T-Mac.
I would love to say T-Mac.
Man, T-Mac was cold.
But I also would love to say people like Joe Johnson and Lou Will.
Mm-hmm. I think you're missing somebody very important, but I'm going to just let you talk because this is going to be on mine.
Okay.
So who's keep on going.
Larry Bird is on there.
All right, so we got Larry. We got one locked in.
All right. Michael Jordan is on there.
MJ.
Kobe Bryant is on there.
Kobe Bryant. Shout out Charles Barkley.
Dirk Nowitzki.
Ooh, with the sleeper with Dirk. Yeah, I like Dirk. That. Dirk. I like that.
Yep.
This very diverse mountain too. Yep. I like that. Yep. Man, Dirk is a good one. He's a shot maker.
Yep.
So Allen Iverson is the first person that comes to my mind.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Yes. AI was a shot
man.
Maker.
It's hard to leave Chuck off of there, man.
So I got AI. I actually have LeBron James. That man makes shots, man. Leading scorer of all time. Like, that means he made a lot of shots. He's been playing forever too, but
yeah.
If you go watch like the early years of LeBron, people forget, I think, because he plays so different now, because he's older.
No, he's a problem.
He was like, you couldn't do anything with him. He's either dunking you with his neck at the rim, or he's stepped back threes.
I remember that Christmas game versus T-Mac.
Man.
Yeah.
T-Mac is my third.
Okay.
I'm leaving one of them off, one of the other GOATs. Yeah, so I got AI, T-Mac, Bron. Shot maker. Who's just a bucket? Man. All right, so here's who I'm deciding between, okay? I got my MJ, Kobe, but I also have Jamal Crawford there.
Yeah.
I got Jamal Crawford there because he's just a bucket. He just doesn't. And Lou Will is in there. I'm trying to think of I'm sorry. Steph Curry. I'm going Steph.
Yep.
My bad, Steph, for taking so long.
Yeah.
That's my four. That's my four shot makers. Like, the people I think about, if they putting it up, that ball's going in. And I ain't, like, I'm standing up, walking the other way.
Yep.
Those are the ones.
That's a good list.
Yeah. Yeah.
Steph is definitely.
Yeah.
Just because I said shot makers and not shooters, but he's definitely a shot maker.
I think he's both, yeah. I think at first he was a shooter. And then he started with the handle and then started getting to the rim.
Yeah,
flow game is crazy.
Him and Kyrie could have been on that list.
Yep. Oh, Kyrie. Ooh.
Yeah, Mount Rushmore is tough, bro.
I know. That's why we have it.
Yeah.
That's why we have it. Now this is stuck. It's on video forever. So
yeah.
I'm telling Kai that you said that. No. man, all right. So this is where we flip the script. You are the interviewer. I'm the interviewee. Two questions for me. Could be anything in the world.
Okay. What's the most difficult thing about running a youth organization?
The parents.
Yeah, that was an easy one. I knew the answer.
No, I can explain. No, I mean, I'm gonna tell you why. It's not the most difficult. I don't know if any of it's difficult. It is. Okay. The parents, because of the expectations and the education that the parents do or do not want to get, is so important. 90% of my parents are so receptive to the information I have and trusting the guidance I'm trying to give them, because I've been doing this for elite with core for 10 years, but I've actually been doing it longer than that just in general. And so their acceptance of that guidance, that 10%, the problem with the 10% is it's usually the kid with the most talent and the parents think they can be LeVar Ball. There's only one LeVar Ball. There hasn't been any other LeVar Balls that I know of that was vocal and did it his way.
Yeah.
And got kids in the league, right?
Yep.
I don't know anyone else. And so trying to be that unique person for your kid has been detrimental in every case I've seen.
Yep.
I've never seen somebody be successful by not following the process.
Yeah.
When the process is trusted and you follow a blueprint to where you're trying to go, things turn out for the best. Whether your kid plays basketball in college or wherever or not. And I think that's what's important, because I've had too many kids put all this pressure on themselves because the expectations of the parents to where they don't even hoop by the time they're in their junior, senior, college, freshman in college. They're just done because the pressure their parents put on them to perform. Some of it's from themselves, but that's the parents' job. Is like, we as coaches can only do so much for 2 hours that we're with your kid. And we try to do our best for the most part, the good coaches, let me say that. So as a parent, just like we're an extension of your home, we're going to hold them accountable for maturity, accountability, and all those things. We need you to be an extension of what we're trying to show them to on the basketball court.
Yeah.
And with this, it's like, hey, it's a process. Just work hard. Give them the formula to the parents and families we deal with most of the time are actually very successful in life. And why don't you apply those success principles to your kid and let them go through the failure you went through?
But speaking on that, sometimes parents are successful in other walks of life and in other industries, and they think that their path to success automatically can be their kid's path to success. Mm. And they're thinking, well, I did it this way. Why can't you do it this way?
That's true.
Right? And that's a lot of the time why kids fall out of love, or if they even love the game, because it's contingent from what the parents think.
Yeah.
Like if they ain't have a good game, they taking their phone. Right?
That's crazy.
Yeah. So it's just, I don't know.
No, parents, like the teach the life principles. Don't teach the basketball. Don't give consequences for basketball. I say this all the time. You could talk about character and you could talk about effort. Those are two things that a kid should have regardless of what they're doing.
Yep.
Don't talk about the X's and O's and the skill and all that kind of stuff and which shot they should have shot. Leave that for the coaches.
Because the process is the process.
Can't skip steps.
Yeah.
Can't skip steps.
And the process can translate.
Always does.
Yeah.
Always does. Yeah,
exactly. But the difference in between the game and other walks of life, it doesn't guarantee success either.
Facts.
You could work your tail off and do your best, and it still might not be good enough in this one moment. Does that negate all the work you've done? No.
Absolutely not.
Does that mean you should stop the work? No.
No.
But that's the problem. Some people stop. They get one little roadblock, one bad game. Oh, this isn't working.
Mm-hmm. The coach.
Start pointing fingers.
Yeah, so the parents are the toughest part. And I love them. And I'm here. And I've been in almost fist fights with parents over their kid. Mm. I will protect that kid. I will walk up to you and say, hey, you need to stop talking to your kid about the game right after a game.
Yeah.
Like, talk about something. Go get them ice cream. I've done it. And people were like, what? Like, hey, you don't need to do that. I will protect that kid. I've been in arguments about what a kid should do.
Mm.
And I don't care. And you know what happens? The parents, they finally start listening, though. Yeah. They need somebody to check them.
They respect that.
And I do it in a respectful way, but it gets heated.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll fight a parent over a kid. I ain't driven.
I've been there.
I ain't never been in a fight in my life. I'm a pacifist. No, all right.
Question I can't
two.
Say the same, but I feel you.
Question two.
What do you enjoy most about working with the professionals?
My favorite time is pre-draft.
Yeah.
I like when they're becoming professionals because it's a boot camp. You get 6 to 8 weeks, get you ready for the NBA, and people don't understand what goes into that process. These kids literally come from these schools. I'm not going to name drop the schools, but they come from these schools not knowing anything.
Yeah.
How to come off a screen, how to set a screen, what a place on the court is called, actions. They don't know any of these things in a place that says they're going to prepare you the best for the NBA. They don't know that stuff. And being able to teach a young man, I've only done pre-draft for the NBA, a young man that stuff that they're going to have to use in summer league in a month is amazing because how fast they catch on.
Right.
And you see that process. The first week they did. The second week they're tired. The third week they missing their family. And then, boom, fourth week they get it. And so just seeing that transition and teaching them to be a pro in that boot camp setting is my favorite thing, man. That's why I actually really only do pre-draft now.
Yeah.
I don't even work with like pros in the summer like I used to. I'll get in there maybe a week or so.
Yeah.
And if Chris calls me, go work with somebody.
I enjoy watching y'all, man.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, for me, I probably have 2 to 3 NBA guys this summer that will work, you know, for a few weeks at a time because, you know, they've been in and out. Mm-hmm. But I do enjoy that process of seeing them transform from college players to young pros, you know. So,
yeah.
Respect to what y'all do.
No, thank you. Thank you, brother. Yeah. All right, so you got a 24-second shot clock. That's your camera there.
Okay.
Let the people know what's happening with you or where to find you on social media or whatever message you have for them.
Got it.
24-second shot clock.
24-second shot clock. All right, so you can reach me, Fluid Motion Gid, Instagram.
Anything Sports Academy, Official Sports Academy, Sports Academy Hoop, Sports Academy Swish, for not only our EYBO girls program, but also for our youth. And, you know, we're off to Iowa this week. So hopefully when this airs, we had a great successful weekend in Iowa. But that's our last event for the EYBO girls until July. Well, actually late June. And then we're finishing strong, putting on a good representation for the coaches and for these future game changers and program changers. So
awesome.
That's it.
Man. Appreciate you,
brother.
Yes, sir.
Yep.
All right, that's all we have for you today, folks. See you next time. Peace.